Hi, this is Britt Carlson. I'm the founder of BK Wine, and I organize wine tours in France. And I've recently launched a new English program. You can find the complete program on bkwine.com. Keep listening to Lynn on Wine and Dine.
You're listening to iWine Radio. Per Carlson is joining us today from Paris. Along with his wife, they have a phenomenal newsletter that they publish online and email to people around the world called BK Wine Brief. BK stands for Per's wife, Britt Carlson. They're based out of Paris, but they're Swedish. And the first time we spoke a couple years ago, it was about the introduction of tours in English. So what Per and Britt do is offer specific tours to groups in English and other languages in France and elsewhere. But they also offer some phenomenal recommendations of wines and places to dine and news. I just love the news from around the world. And what particularly caught my attention, why I asked Per to join us today, was in the February newsletter, they had a column called I Promise. And even though it was after New Year's, and of course we're long after New Year's, still the six I Promises are good advice all year round. Per, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm glad to be with you again.
So this BK Wine Brief that you publish weekly or biweekly, is it a collaboration between the two of you writing, or does Britt write the majority of it?
Well, it's very much the two of us who writes it together. Usually Britt writes some of the pieces and I do some of the other ones. The restaurant and wine producers' recommendations are usually from Brit, and most of the other stuff is usually from me.
Even though both of you probably end up dining out at the same places,
quite often, but not all the time. We do so many wine tours now these days, so we often go in each direction, in two different directions.
Oh my! Well, could you have imagined that a couple of years ago?
No, I don't think so.
Well, before we start talking about the tours, let's go over these 6 points that you bring up for I Promise.
Yeah,
vows,
sure.
Venice vows for 2009, which are excellent, excellent advice.
Well, it's a bit almost a reflection of our philosophy of drinking and tasting wines, I think. What we tried to say with those points was try new things, discover new things.
So, for instance, number one is buy 6 different bottles instead of 6 of the same thing. And most wine retailers, at least in the United States, they will order a 6-bottle discount or a 12-bottle discount. Do they do that in France as well?
Actually, not so much in France, no. It's very common in the UK, for instance, but not so much in France.
Okay. Okay, so, and I agree with you so much that, and as a wine retailer myself, I would give people the same advice, that life is too short to be drinking the same thing, and it's certainly about adventure and exploring your curiosity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we thought about our own wine cellar a bit also, and when we started to think about it, we actually realized that there's probably very few wines we have more than 1 or 2 bottles of in our wine cellar.
Oh, wow. Okay, now number two, spend a couple of extra euros or dollars on the bottle. Explain to us what your thought was on that one.
Well, it's really a very simple issue. By spending just a little bit more, you get so much more wine experience from it. I mean, when you buy a bottle of wine, at least here in Europe, quite a big portion of the price is taken by the taxman.
Okay.
And so if you add a dollar or a few dollars to the price, you'll actually get a lot more wine, and you pay, all that money goes virtually directly to the wine producer, so you'll get a much better wine.
Do you have any idea, could you tell us what is the percentage of tax on a bottle of wine?
It varies quite a lot from country to country, but to give you an idea, just you have the sales tax here in France, for instance, which is 20%.
Wow.
And if I look at Sweden, where I come from, the sales tax is 25%.
Oh, my gosh.
So if I take a bottle of wine that I could here in France buy for, let's say, €3 or $3,
okay,
at the wine producers, that would probably retail in Sweden for two or three times as much.
Oh, my gosh.
You have transportation, you have taxes.
And, right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So we're kind of spoiled in the United States. I mean, people are paying whatever local county and state tax, but in where I live, it's 7% tax.
Oh, yes. That sounds very nice.
Yes. Well, and still, people are complain about the cost of wine, and they think that a wine retailer makes a lot of money. But in fact, the majority of the price actually goes to the wholesaler and to transportation, and then to the little bit of tax. You don't
yeah.
get rich on wine retail.
No.
Okay, number three, don't choose the house wine in a restaurant.
Yeah, that's an interesting one actually, because what it really says is you have to know who makes the wine. The really interesting thing with wine is when you know a little bit about the producer, when you know a bit of the background, and the house wine is just a house wine. You might not even know where it comes from.
Right. And in Europe in particular, it might be something local, but in the United States, it's almost never, ever a local wine that is the house wine.
Yeah.
It's just whatever they can get the cheapest.
Yeah, well, that's often the case.
Now I want to exclude premium restaurants. They don't have that philosophy. They actually put a lot of attention into house wines, but the bulk majority of restaurants do not.
No, I agree, and it's. I think you have to let's say moderate that point a bit, and say that if the house wine is well chosen, and if it actually does have a name, well, by all means, take that. But most house wines are sold just without a name at all.
Yep.
But as you say, many, many good restaurants have excellent house wines. So
yes.
You shouldn't take it too literally.
Right. But I think on average, it's very good advice.
Yeah.
Okay, so number four, at least once or twice a month, choose a wine that comes from a district that you're not familiar with.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's, again, the discovery.
And or something else that is not, Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne, BBC, as you say. But in the United States, it would be, instead of BBC, it's, let's say.
Yeah, what is it? It's ABC, isn't it? Anything but Chardonnay.
Or anything but White Zinfandel, or anything but Pinot Noir. I mean, people are stuck on certain wines or varieties right now in the States. But okay, number five.
Well, that's actually an interesting thing, because you're starting to get new exciting varieties, new different varieties at least, which are getting better known.
Yes. Oh, that movie Sideways brought Pinot Noir to a much wider audience than existed before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Chardonnay, White Zinfandel, Cabernet, Merlot have always been popular, but to people in America, they still don't understand what a Chablis is.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't even understand what a Champagne is across mm-hmm. the board, because those names have been used generically here in the United States.
Yeah, but I think that's changing now. There is a new agreement which means that there will be less American Champagne now, so you'll have more sparkling wine.
Yes, yes.
So a more identity or more geographic origin in the wines.
Yes, I know there are some. I've seen some bloggers that have kind of been upset about that and making fun of the Europeans, but I think they're missing the whole point of it. Something is what it is because of where it comes from, whether it's a wine or a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, number five, choose a wine that is not recommended or on a newsletter or something from a wine expert.
Yeah, which is a bit talking against ourselves, you might think,
yes.
Because our newsletter is about recommending wines. But it's really what we wanted to say with that was decide for yourself. Try something and decide for yourself if it's good or not. Because every time you discuss about wine with other people, you have different opinions. My taste is not the same as your taste, so my 95-point wine wouldn't be your 95-point wine.
Exactly. Exactly. I could not agree with you more.
That's difficult to understand sometimes, I think.
Okay, number six. My idea of a good-looking man is not necessarily somebody else's idea of a good-looking man. And vice versa for women.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Exactly. But it's the same thing holds true for wine and food preferences and all the other kind of preferences there are. Okay, the number six is, discover a new wine region in situ.
Yes.
So when you're traveling, drink local.
Yes, and go explore on site.
And, you know, eat local, drink local. Okay, Per, we're going to go to a short break here, and when we come back, let's talk about tours. And you just got returned home from Spain.
Indeed.
We will be right back with Per Carlson from BK Wine Brief. I have links up always.
Hi there, this is Andreas Larsson. I'm currently holding the title Best Sommelier of the World 2007. If you want to join me for a discussion about food and wine or read about my wine experiences, please join me on andreaslarsson.org.
Bonjour, this is Marie-Chantal Lebouc speaking from Bordeaux. I'm the founder and the curator and guide of the new Musée du Vin et du Négoce, the wine museum in Bordeaux. And you can visit us online at mvnb.fr.
Per Carlson is our guest today. I always love reading their newsletters that they put out because they're in Europe. They're based in Paris, and a lot of the news that they put, that they share, is not something that's necessarily something that's going to catch my eye here in the U.S. Now, when we first spoke a couple of years ago, we were talking about the wine tours that Per and his wife Britt host and conduct in English. And, of course, they also offer wine tours in Finnish. And, Per, do you also offer tours in French, or is it just Finnish and English?
It's not in French, but we do English, we do Swedish. Swedish is the biggest market we have today. We do Finnish.
Okay.
We also do quite a bit of tour for Norwegians and Danes.
And each one of those is a different language?
Swedish and Norwegian is fairly close, and also Danish is quite close. So that's really the same basic language. But Finnish is very different. I don't
really
understand a word of Finnish. So we have a Finnish partner who works with us on the Finnish tours.
Oh, my heaven. Now, how has the world embraced your tours in English?
It's going forward, but I'd say it's going slowly. I think that's because we're in Sweden, we're in Scandinavia, we're a very well-known brand, or if you want to, we're very well-known people in the wine world in Scandinavia, but we're not very well known in the English language world.
My heaven. Well, I love your sense of humor, and your focus is it's so personal. And I think that people would enjoy a great deal by going on a tour, wine tour with you or Britt. Now, tell me, you just got back from Spain. Were you with Britt, or was it just you with a group?
No, this was the Spanish tour was actually something which was to discover a new wine region.
Okay.
So it wasn't on our own travel program. It was me and a couple of other wine journalists.
Okay. And were you did you do this, because right now, or you just finished a tour in your spring offering in Portugal?
Yes.
And is that in English or what language?
That was English, yes.
Okay. And is it pronounced Alentejo?
Well, I'm not very good in Portuguese,
yeah.
But I think they call it Alentejo.
Tejo. Okay.
Yes, sort of.
Okay.
But Portuguese is quite difficult.
Yes.
I know a bit of Spanish, so it was easier in Spain last week.
Oh, okay. Okay, now this, is as far as I see on the newsletter, the next tours that people can sign up for, one in October, one in November to Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about those.
Well, on the English language program, that's the next course. We have two Bordeaux tours. We've called it Bordeaux Confidential. We tried to find a name which would suit the trips, and it's actually a bit different from many other wine tours, because we don't necessarily go to all the famous chateaux. Well, we do go to one or two famous chateaux, but what we really want people to discover is all the wine world which is behind the famous name, and meet the real people making the wine.
So, for instance, do you get to eat a lunch or a dinner in a chateau owner's property on their estate or with their family? Is it that sort of intimacy?
Oh yeah, I mean we usually do. I mean it's a 3-day tour, and we usually have the three lunches. At chateau, different chateau, and depending on where we are, in most places we actually have the owner of the chateau there with us having lunch. For instance, if I can tell you an example, what we did last autumn, we had a harvest lunch at the chateau. So we had the people who were traveling with us, they harvested in the morning, and then we had lunch with the other harvest workers. That was very nice.
Ooh, and were you out in the field, in the vineyard, eating?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh. Oh, I hope you had good weather.
Oh, we had. It was very, very nice, actually.
Oh, wow.
It had been a very poor summer, but when it came to harvest, it was excellent weather.
Are there, on these 3-day Bordeaux tours, are you concentrated very much on wine from morning to night, or are there any side tours?
No, it's very focused on wine. So we have maybe three visits in a day, one in the morning, one over lunch, and one in the afternoon. And that actually makes for quite a full day, because
yes.
It takes quite a while to visit a chateau. And the really interesting thing is when you start discussing with the winemaker or discussing with the chateau owner, and you get a dialogue and a real exchange going. And then it takes time. So it's not just in, open a few bottles and out.
Right.
It easily takes 2 hours to do a visit.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Now, there are a couple things from the news, from the current March, and I would imagine you're going to be sending out in April soon.
I'm working on it, yes.
Okay, BK Wine Brief, and people can sign up to receive this newsletter free.
Yep.
And something that really caught my eye, and that is a wine MBA.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, because I was asking you at one point about the very famous business school in Paris. I don't remember what it was that you told me.
It's the INSEAD, MBA, just outside of Paris.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so this caught my attention, a master's degree from the Royal Agricultural College, Wine Business Management.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing because personally, I used to be a business person. I used to work in high tech before I started together with my wife, or rather I joined my wife in this wine business. So I'm very interested in the business side of wine. And this wine MBA, it's on top of everything, it's in the UK. So it's not in a very wine-producing country, even if they do make some wine in the UK now.
Yep. Global warming is helping that situation out, huh?
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yes.
Okay, and of course, if you're interested in learning more about this, if you go to bkwine.com and you can download the March newsletter and check that out. Mm-hmm. Something else that really caught my eye, and that was cocaine is cheaper than wine in Britain.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of the attention-grabbing headlines. Yeah,
and this must be because of taxes?
Well, you know, I only know one side of it. I only know the wine side of it, so I don't know how it works on the cocaine side.
Right. But,
I'm not sure what substance it is behind the story because it's a story that came from a UK newspaper.
The Telegraph.
Maybe it was an attention grabber on their side.
Oh, yeah, that caught my eye.
One of the interesting things just in that, if I can add
yes.
on, another interesting thing is on the new grape varieties that have
yes.
been
approved yes.
in France. The whole wine market is being liberalized little by little in Europe, and now they have introduced a new Albarino grape variety in France, which will soon be producing some wine, we think.
Do you know what regions or what region it's being planted?
Yeah, it's. We actually met the guy who's probably going to be the first wine producer who will plant this a couple of weeks ago when we were down in southern France, close to Spain, in Languedoc.
Laurent Miguel?
Yes, that's right, exactly.
Wow. Albarino from France. Who would have imagined 20 or 30 years ago? Per Carlson, thank you so very much for joining us today. As always, it's such a pleasure talking to you.
Lynn, thank you.
Quite honestly, I can't recommend a better couple to go on an English-speaking wine tour in France or anywhere else in Europe. You can keep up with them online at bkwine.com. iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.
Bonjour, my name is Christophe Chateau, just like Chateau, it's easy to remember. I'm director of the Union des Côtes de Bordeaux, and I'm working now on a new appellation, Côte de Bordeaux, that is going to be the family name for all the Côtes appellation, starting with the vintage 2007. We will talk soon about that on Wine & Dine.
Hello, bonjour, je suis Philippe Castéja, président des Grands Crus Classés en 1855, qui regroupe les crus du Médoc et de Sauternes. Je suis ravi de vous avoir et de vous savoir que vous m'écoutez. J'aimerais vous en apprendre plus sur nos grands crus si vous allez à crus classés, crus-classés@crusclassés.com. Merci d'être avec nous. Au revoir.